It's 2:22 a.m. in 2008, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I'm Molly Lambert, and I am here in Los Angeles with
Tess Lynch, and over in New York we have
Emily Yoshida.
Hooray!
Hooray! Hooray!
That was like a weird kind of harmony.
Hooray!
Like a barbershop trio.
Guys, I saw people doing doo-wop on Hollywood Boulevard yesterday, and they were great.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. I was like,
how many?
Three.
Nice. Are you sure it wasn't us? Our shadow doubles?
It reminded me of us. It was like some older dudes.
I love older dudes doing
doo-wop in front of the Pantages.
They're doing the
do. Yeah. I was like, sure, this should come back.
Yeah.
I was like, if things are coming back, nothing else that has come back has been good, but I'm fine with like doo-wop comes back. Last week, we talked about some bad bug experiences briefly, as is one of the recurring Night Call topics. And I wanted to share that after the episode, West Coast producer Roy said he had a bug incident and he summarized it. I said, tell me the story. And he just said, oh, it's just short, earwig in a straw.
That's why we should ban straws.
That's
not, it's not the obvious reason.
That's right.
But it's a good reason.
It's because there might be earwigs in them.
I just remember, the thing I have with earwigs is that we had a shade when I was a kid that was made out of, like, tubes. They were basically effectively, like, it was a shade made out of straws, like tubes of plastic.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like a straw-type roll-down shade. And it faced west, so we got that, like, late afternoon sun coming through. And in that sunlight, you could just see the silhouettes of earwigs. They love straws. They love little tight spaces.
They're tube,
like
tube
ears
animals.
And straws.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're tube-oriented animals.
I feel like we're tube-oriented animals also.
It's true.
I like those little sea creatures that live in tubes.
What are those?
Well, I was reading. I posted a bunch before I quit Twitter. I quit Twitter, everybody. I did it.
Wait, really?
Yeah. You didn't notice that my name doesn't come up? I kept saying I was going to do it, and then I did it. And
did you delete your account?
Yeah.
Incredible.
You didn't notice your follower count, Emily, dropped by one?
It dropped by one important
I
follower.
Noticed on mine.
Yes. I applaud you. I have been talking about how it's a really hard thing for me to do. Like, I will just fully admit that, like, the amount of followers I have on Twitter I regard as, like, an actual objective accomplishment in my life, which is really sad.
No, I was like, oh, I've accumulated so many followers. But then I was like, I've been on this thing for 8 years. That's so long.
I quit for like a year, yeah. I think, and I lost my handle, which was really sad, and then it was replaced by a butt.
Oh, remember? Right, a butt.
Yeah. It was just a butt, like a sandy butt.
A butt.
And I was like, oh, man. And had some followers who followed me. It never posted. And then I came up with a new one and, like, started from scratch with, like, lowly, you know, like, 10 followers and was just like, am I just talking to these 10 people?
And your new one is Mr. Tess Lynch.
It's Mr. Tess Lynch. It used to be Phlox Lombardi.
Yeah. And now that's a sandy butt.
And now that's the sandy butt.
I figured you just changed your handle the way you can do.
No, I deactivated. I wanted to go away. I think I'm going to do it again.
I deactivated.
Yeah.
That's because I had been like, I had put on a code so that if I signed out, I had to like get a text to sign back in. I was telling my boyfriend about it. I was like, yeah, you know, it's like when they put up those suicide barriers on bridges that like make it a little harder to jump over, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he was like, the fact that this is like what you're comparing to logging into Twitter. I was like, you have that extra moment to think about it and then you don't jump. He was
I was off of it for a long time and all I did was just, log out of. I haven't had the app on my phone until recently. I added it just to do Night Call tweets, but for my personal one, I haven't had the app for a really long time. And so I just logged out, which meant that I had to log in each time.
And that was
like enough to make me not do it for a really long time.
It's exactly like cigarettes in so
except
many
less
ways.
Delicious.
No, except less pleasurable.
Yeah.
It's totally true. It's like I smoked for way less long than I was on Twitter. But it's similar. It's like at first you're like, gotta log back in, gotta log back in. And then like after a little while, you just like don't want to anymore. But yeah, I don't know. It was just making me feel really bad every day. So well, I took a break.
Give us a night call at 1-240-469 if you've quit Twitter or thinking about it, and tell us what's on your mind. Because I feel like this is a process a lot of us are going through right now.
Especially
or at some stage of it.
I mean,
especially if you've quit Twitter, you should call us and tell you what's on your mind because you have nowhere else to put it.
Yeah,
that's right.
We're the only ethical
personal Twitter.
Right. Yep. We're the message board that replaces Twitter. Just like we have conversations in a really slow back and forth way.
Yeah.
Maybe this is like counterintuitive, but I did sign up for Reddit today.
That is
only
what dimension of chess are you playing, Emily?
Only for Terrace House Reddit.
Oh, nice. That makes sense.
I want to be able to post on Terrace House.
There's
Reddit.
A good Reddit. I mean, like,
of course, there's a good Reddit. Know. There's lots of like. I mean, there's all kinds of things on Reddit, just like there's all kinds of things on Twitter.
Hey, you guys. And, can I tell you the best Reddit thread that I totally... I'm on Reddit. Secret Reddit.
Oh.
Yeah, but...
Secret Reddit
well, I mean,
is
I
night
have,
call.
Like, a...
Wait, should
Reddit.
We start a night call Reddit?
Wait, but can I just really quick tell you that the best thread was mentioned on Twitter the other day, and it was a guy who was like, I think my landlord is stalking me, and I'm, like, leaving these post-it notes all over my apartment, like, you know, he is or someone. It was this big thing where he was like, I'm being stalked, and someone was like... You know, I don't mean to sound alarmist, but you're having like this kind of a psychosis of like you don't remember what you do is a symptom of carbon monoxide poisoning. Do you have a carbon monoxide device to tell you if you're being poisoned? He was like, no, I'm going to get one. And then he was like, yeah, the reading was crazy. And then he updated it and he was like, I had terrible carbon monoxide poisoning. He went to the hospital. They were like, you know, part of your brain has been affected, but don't worry. Like, most of it'll grow back, but you'll never be entirely the same. And so his life was probably saved by Reddit.
Wait, hold up.
For real.
He was leaving himself the post-it notes?
He was, like, blacking out and like, just writing himself, like, weird, scary notes and, like, doing weird things on his computer. He thought someone was, like, breaking into his apartment.
So he was stalking himself.
He was stalking himself.
It was, like, memento. Exactly. He was trying to tell himself.
Yep.
Haven't we talked about carbon monoxide poisoning being the explanation behind a lot of... shadow people sightings and
no, but it makes sense. Well, I think a lot of also, like, people who think they're being followed... It's like you feel the feel it like it can be a kind of brain damage where it's like you feel like yourself is outside yourself, but like
depersonalization
just behind you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Tomboy X. Tomboy X offers amazing underwear that anybody feels comfortable in, regardless of where you fall on the size or gender spectrum. So this is the kind of underwear that you would want to look into if you are sick of underwear that has more frills than function, if you are really over the underwear that your mom got you to help you femme up, or if your underwear is just super uncomfortable and you have an entire drawer of thongs where you're like, what am I doing? You really should consider Tomboy X. It is awesome. We're big fans.
All of their products are ethically produced and they fit test on hundreds of bodies. They offer sizes XS to 4X because they think you should be exactly who you were born to be. No apologies.
Their bras are soft and flattering. Their underwear is designed to stay put no matter how active you are. And they've got awesome boxer briefs that are perfect for lounging around in.
It's time to stop wearing underwear that doesn't make you feel confident. So go to tomboyx.com/call. And check out their special bundles and pack pricing. And Night Call listeners will get an extra 15% off with the code CALL. Again, code CALL, that's C-A-L-L, for an extra 15% off. Ditch whatever you're wearing for a pair of Tomboy X underwear. Go to tomboyx.com/call.
Guys, should we take a night call?
Let's take a night call.
We did send out the call for a certain kind
We're
of
We're going to take
call.
A night call into the past.
Yes.
Specifically 10 years ago to 2008, a time before any of us were on Twitter. Tess and I had not met Emily yet.
No. Nope.
But we had met each other.
Yes. And can I tell you really quick that one thing that relates to what we just talked about, I was looking through all my emails from 2008, which took like about 4.5 hours, but I did it. And the one really interesting thing I found, it was really the only one, was that Molly sent me a Live Science article in 2008 about shadow people.
Oh.
And it was the first time I had ever heard of them. And it was, the explanation was something about the brain, like, you know, reacting to certain external stimuli.
Oh, wow. It was, so we've had all these
full
conversations
circle.
Before, exactly. And then we've been leaving each other post-it notes from the past.
Yep.
Saying, hey, boring people, get some new things to think and talk
Stop
about.
Circling.
Stop obsessing over shadow people. Well, let's take a night call
let's
from
do
2008.
It.
Hello, night callers. It's Jessica. I'm in Chicago and I'm in bed with a headache. But I have a very visceral memory of 2008 and spending at house sitting for my friend who was on tour with Girl Talk and taping up pictures and articles about both Barack Obama and soon-to-be Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who at that point I thought was interesting and perhaps a tiny bit cute and also going to be a great mayor. I was wrong about all of those things. Goodbye.
Let's say that's a great take. I mean, that's the main take. I think it's just, it's always weird to look back and see that you were naive about something that you didn't know you were naive about yet.
Right.
Especially right. In terms of like politicians or people that you like invested time and caring in. And then you're like, man, that turned out wrong.
Yep.
Do you think that we ever really had that kind of naivete, though, as like within our generation?
Yes,
as far
because
as...
I think everybody thought that like racism was fixed because Obama became president, and we were like headed towards a more progressive future. Not that there would
right.
be like a huge blowback to the idea of like things becoming more progressive. Like, I was like, great, now we have a black president, and then we have like a Muslim female president, and then we like all of the underrepresented groups of history will get to be president. And like, that was obviously not how a lot of people felt that are now making themselves known. And first they did it as the Tea Party and it was fringy, and now they're all in everything and it sucks.
I remember the most relevant thing that I knew about Rahm Emanuel at the time in 2008.
Was that his
like
brother?
Cousins. Yeah, or his brother. Yeah, it was
his brother
Ari
is
Emanuel.
Ari Emanuel,
the inspiration for Ari Gold.
Right, which is
on
like
Entourage.
Super a tip that somebody might be a
yeah.
psycho.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
If,
but at that point, you're like, oh, all of Hollywood makes you cool. Like,
well, also, like, let's talk about brothers for a second.
Oh, man.
Emily.
Well, Emily hates brothers.
Emily comes out hard against the brother film industrial complex, and I agree with
I'm
her.
I'm really anti-brothers.
Well, it's there's
to
been...
To the point where I'm not even that excited even about, like, the new Coen Brothers movie. Like, whatever. I like a lot of Coen Brothers movies.
No, well, the problem is, like, the Coen Brothers made film brothers a thing that
yes.
could be, like, hey, there's two of them. And
that's it.
This is my tweet. It's like you go in for a pitch meeting and they're like, well, is the director a man? And they're like, no, it's two men.
And they're like, what?
And they're related.
Even better.
What? Two little Spielbergs that are the same.
I don't care too much if people are brothers.
I like them.
I like
somebody's the dead weight in that.
Well,
and somebody's
yeah.
I like the Hughes brothers. And the Coen brothers.
Sure.
And that is maybe where... But there have been just a lot of brother teams coming up recently.
Look, I have mixed feelings about the Duplass brothers, but I don't hate everything they do. Some things they do, I
hate
like.
Everything the Duplass brothers I
We're
either.
Just
I mean, like
they have something that none of us... I mean, I have a brother, but...
yeah, come
so
on.
So you literally have
Wait,
everything
I literally... I actually... Not only do I have a great brother, my brother, Ben Lambert.
And you make content
shout
with
out.
Your brother.
I totally
yeah.
also make content with my brother. But
hypocrite.
It's cool because we're a brother and sister who
Must
are friends.
Be nice.
We're like... we're more of like in the Bart and Lisa.
Yeah.
Lane, what about sisters?
I don't like. Well, I mean,
there aren't enough sister duos, and there aren't enough female directing duos.
There are the Saskia sisters,
and there's a lot of sisters in music, and some. And for some reason, I don't like that.
Oh, you don't like that because you guys are both only children, so you're like, fuck having a sibling.
Well,
be your own person.
I don't like the idea of sharing an interior life with somebody else.
That's hilarious.
I don't think you can artistically make something that like honors your point of view if you have a shared history with someone.
Look,
like you're going to incorporate too many cooks.
I can't co-write either, but we all are doing a podcast together. So like sisters of the moon.
Sisterhood.
What about like, just like, you know, ladies of the canyon, like she will weave her loom today and I will bake
like
this
the annihilation
pie.
I like the annihilation of the self or the ego in like an all-female group or something.
Well,
like I like the idea of like an ensemble that you could be a part of, like an egoless ensemble.
How do you feel about a night call separatist all-female commune where some men are allowed but they have to do all the domestic labor and emotional labor?
Let's make that the grounds of our Reddit.
Tess can't do communes.
I'm sorry.
Because
I ruined it.
She doesn't. But
I don't like eating at a table with a bunch of
what
people.
What if everyone had their own space?
Just because of Pan Quotidien?
Yes.
100%.
That
is
that
why.
Awful place.
She hates communal tables.
I do.
But like, how do you feel about like, you don't like communal bathrooms either?
No, I don't like communal anything. Like, I don't know how I would react.
But
to
you have like a family.
Yeah, I do. No one's invited over for dinner and there's no play dates.
This is our space.
No wire hangers.
Yeah. Let's go back deeper into 2008.
This next night call is from a true stan.
Hi, I'm Emily's mom, and I remember 2008 because Emily and I went on a road trip across the country from Arkansas to Washington State. That's all I was going to share, some details about that. Bye.
So that was a call from my mom.
Thanks, Nancy. Emily's mom.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks, Nancy.
Yeah. Well, we did go on a 2008 road trip from Arkansas to Washington State. That's true.
Why were you going?
Yeah, why?
Well, my mom was moving from Arkansas to Washington, so we packed up her house in Arkansas where she had been living for a couple years, and then we're moving to Washington. Actually, that move that move was interesting. It was an interesting road trip. I like road trips a lot, and I remember a lot of the pictures I took on that road trip.
Yeah, I feel like that's a part of the country I have never driven through and have no...
Oh, yeah.
I've, like, learned that all of my mental images of the Midwest are actually of, like, South Pasadena set dress to look like the Midwest in movies.
Well, where did you... What did you pass through? Like, what route did you take?
We would have gone through... I think we went through Kansas. Yeah.
A lot of cornfields.
Kansas is a lot of wheat, and it's very, very flat, and there's, like, nothing for a really long time. That drive through the middle of Kansas is very long. I do remember we went up through Oregon and, like west eastern Oregon, though, which was pretty wild because that was the first time I was like, oh, there are, like, McCain signs out here, which was, like, very foreign to me. I was like, I kind of got an interesting look at the red state blue state comparison on that road trip, because it was, you know, a campaign year and everything. It was a very hot presidential race by our standards at that time, so it was interesting to kind of get that sort of cross section and see how things changed and how the political field changed, even just like from stopping in diners and motels and whatever along the way. Yeah, and so I was very like, oh, yeah, like, so much of the West Coast still is super, like, conservative and super racist and
stuff. Yeah, and the Pacific Northwest, which obviously has this, like, crunchy granola reputation, but also, like, was founded as, like, a white separatist colony and obviously retains a lot of that.
Oregon especially, I would say.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in Seattle and the Seattle area in general, as we talked about. So it was interesting to kind of go back to it. That was the first time.
It sounds like an indie movie.
Oh, yeah. It was like 100%. I was like living a Sundance movie. I remember more big touristy things we did when we were moving out to
Iowa when I was a kid, because we went to like the corn maze and we went to Wall Drug and all these like classic.
I want to go to all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, which was cool. Like, I was really glad I went to all those places, especially like as a surly tween.
Has anyone been to Mount Rushmore?
No. I've been to what, Mount Rushmore.
You have?
Yeah, totally.
I totally want to go to Mount Rushmore.
So many. I've seen so much of this goddamn country.
You represent
things you've seen.
You're representing for the middle of the country on this podcast.
I am. I am.
Tess is the east and west.
I am a Midwesterner in many respects.
You are. Tess, when was your big road trip through the South?
My big road trip was in 2006. We went from Arizona to Washington, D.C.
And you saw a lot of stuff.
Saw a lot of stuff. Oh, and yeah. I don't mean to be TMI, but I remember very little because I had a really bad urinary tract infection. I'm just going to say it because it's important to normalize that I was like so anxious the whole time because, you know, I just like, I don't know. Big fan of like being in the car a long time anyway, and I was just like, ugh.
Right, because personal space.
Yeah, and I also had just gotten a puppy, and we had to board the puppy, and like so anytime I would just be staring out the window and being like, Oklahoma's really pretty. I'm really far away from my cool puppy. I have a UTI, and like it was really hot. I mean, it was interesting. We did like we stopped in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, by mistake overnight.
Consequences.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to drive through places that I'd never like spent much time in Oklahoma. We spent some time in Memphis, and that was beautiful.
You loved Memphis and you loved Atlanta.
I just always love Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like my fantasy.
And did you
real
go
estate,
through New
like,
Orleans?
We didn't go through Atlanta that time, though. I've just been there. We did not. I've been to New Orleans. My husband's from there, but no, we didn't. We were like, it was Tucson, and then we. For Memphis was like the one cool place we stopped.
I really want to go to Memphis.
I love
Memphis. I want to go there too.
Yeah.
Guys, night call Memphis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wait. I was going to say about the road trip that I just remembered, which is actually like some context for it that is actually extremely 2008 to me, is that I was able to take that road trip because I like went on a prolonged leave from my job and then found out when I got back that I didn't have a job anymore. I was just like, I'm going to go for a while. Hope my job is back here for me when I get back to LA. And it wasn't. I also left my car on a street that I thought was not going to have any street cleaning.
Oh, man.
But it didn't have street cleaning, but they shot something there. There was a film shoot while I was away. So it got towed and I came back like a month later to like a 2000 or something dollar tow that I had to pay for. Which really set the stage for the next year of my life in a pretty gnarly way. Also didn't have a job at that point. I just remember the dismay of coming back and like my car not being there and being like, oh God, like what am I going to do?
Yeah. The worst thing is coming back from a long trip and having something like that because you just, you know, you're like the tone has been set.
Yep.
It's
yep.
like when you forget like, to clean out your fridge and then you come back and you're like, oh no,
oh, boy.
Like my whole life sucks now.
What's that smell?
What's that smell? Should we take another night call?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, night call. It's 2:45 a.m. in Chicago, Illinois, and I remember 2008. I was 18 and living in a small town in Wisconsin and finishing high school when 2008 started, so a lot of the decadence of the year was really only something I absorbed through reading, like, Spin magazine and the internet in a really filtered way, and I bought a promo copy of Justice's Cross from a used CD store, which I've always really loved because I was imagined some person who worked in like radio, you got it and hated it, and instead of associating that album with like getting wasted at some sleazy party, I associate it more with like the times that my parents would let me decide what to use, what to listen to when we were driving in the car. And then I went to college and got hooked on MP3 blogs and I downloaded some DJ software like everyone else did. And it was so fun. I feel like it was a very goofy, like wholesome version of other people's 2008. But at the time I thought it was the most incredible thing.
I feel like, yeah, I think that Cross is probably the album of 2008, at least for me. I don't know, in my corner of the world. What about you guys? Did that fit into your
I wasn't as into Bloghouse as many of our friends and fans. Emily is our premier Bloghouse person.
Yeah.
But my boyfriend was also super into Bloghouse at the time. Megan Garvey, friend of the pod.
Oh, yeah. Bloghausen.
Bloghouse
historian.
I was like Bloghouse adjacent, but I feel like I was like, that was when I was like DJing a country night.
Oh.
I was on my own. On my own trip.
Didn't I go do that with you once and we got like yelled at?
We got yelled at for using CDs, which I maintain was like fine to do because it was also like when you could newly download music and burn it to CDs.
Right.
So yeah. I was really excited. I had vinyl also, but these, you know, that's where I always fall.
It was still irrelevant at
that
point.
That's where I always fall on the digital and film of anything. I'm always like, both are good in their own ways. Yeah. And yeah, I like... had records, but I also brought CDs.
We've been asked to explain what Bloghouse is.
Oh.
Why was it called that?
Because it was electronic music that was made popular through blogs, a type of music blog.
What are more examples of Bloghouse?
I think of like Felix the House Cat. Like,
Cut Copy.
Fortet.
Yeah, yeah.
Count?
Fortet or predate.
Okay. And, like, it's a little more new rave, but, like, Crystal Castles.
It was all this, like, party music, like, super heavy.
And, like, everything up in the front of the mix. That's the thing I think of with Bloghouse. It's, like, it's made to be played out of a laptop.
Squelchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sleigh Bells, maybe?
Oh, yeah, Sleigh Bells.
Like, some of that stuff, I feel like, does hold up. I was probably a little too snobby about it because it was, like, too hair metal-y to me in some way. We talk about this a lot, I feel like, about my belief that the 2000s were just, like, now I see them as, like, Weimar Germany.
Right.
Because it's like, yeah, everybody was, like, partying and hedonistic and, like, things felt like they were getting more progressive and just, like, would forever. But also there was, like, the bad Vice magazine, like, exploit yourself because it's cool and you're, like, if you don't do it, you're not cool.
Yeah.
Kind of journalism.
We were doing a lot of, like... snarking, I realized going through emails.
Probably.
Everybody was really communicative who was writing online.
Yes.
We were still doing this recording.
Yeah, we were doing this recording.
Non-society, I found like many emails per day about Goop and non-society.
Right, there were a lot of like bitchy, there was like gawker culture was still in effect of just like
definitely
bitchy. And that was what everybody thought was like the worst thing that could happen on the internet,
right.
Which is really funny to think about now. It was like somebody could say something mean about you in public.
Yeah. I think they made some pretty bad calls, but I miss gawker so much.
They did, but then when they fought Hulk Hogan, it was that thing of like both of these people are evil. But like the way in which Nick Denton is evil is still preferable to the way in
completely.
Which Peter Thiel is evil.
Also, this is the thing I keep saying. It's like, don't mete out justice like against people who are like blameless. Like the reason that anybody figures out like what a law should be or what a guideline should be is when somebody's like right up against it. Like virtuous people aren't the people who prompt the deciding of like...
Right, well, I always thought Gawker was going to, like, break real stories eventually. Like, I thought Gawker...
They did.
They did, but they were all kind of, like...
They broke lots of stories. I mean...
But I feel like those stories were, like, ticky-tack. I feel like they never broke, like, the big political scandal that I expected them to.
Part of me just is, like, well, I wish they were here now.
I appreciated that they did, like, go hard on Mark Zuckerberg from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Valleywag.
Oh, you mean Valleywag? Yeah.
I just became a million years old in real time.
You quit Twitter.
Valleywag is a great website, and the stuff that Natasha Tiku did there was always, I was like, this is the stuff that like needs to be done, is people, you know, covering tech in a way that's critical, and they were like the only people doing it. And then that was also obviously what made Silicon Valley want Gawker not to exist.
Right.
Yeah,
because they were like, we should only be covered in like glowing, amazing terms about all the great stuff we're doing. And that's then just tech starting to take on the press as like, let's buy it out and then close it. So, yeah, a lot of people. Emily, was your job in print or in writing that you didn't have anymore when you came home?
Oh, good God, no. Oh, yes, my journalism job that I had in 2008. No, I worked at a camera shop in Hollywood. There was something about, like, later, I think I also spent a lot of time reading AV Club at work. There was something about, though, like, the years of reading Gawker and reading all this, like, gossip about media figures in New York that I had no idea, like, what, I had no idea how to parse it at all. That felt like that feels very inseparable from the vibe of, like, I remember so many things that I read in that office and watched in that office, including, like, Britney Spears's Gimme More performance at the VMAs. I remember all of us, like, gathered around to, like, watch that and be like, what's happened to her?
She was on the rebound very, like, in 2K8, though, right?
No, 2008 was the bad year.
Wasn't it the fall and then the comeback album, though? Wasn't that all in 2008?
Well, the album came out and the album was a huge success, but they were also, they were like...
She wasn't stable.
She wasn't in good shape and they were making her perform anyway.
Right.
And
it was, okay, yeah, I do remember
But then
that.
She stopped performing at a certain point.
Yeah, and people were
they
like...
They realized it was just like a losing game.
It was horrible. It was like the worst thing ever. They like put her on stage before she was ready and also people were like very mean about her appearance.
I do remember that. But it's hard because like... Her decline had been going on for a bit, and I was like, she was pulling it together. It's like, no, she's not.
Well, it's like, you know, we talk about this. Like, people who have mental health problems, like, you can't force them to perform.
Yeah.
And when somebody is, like, the cash, you know, maker in a family of people, that's why all child stars are bad.
Yep.
Well, it felt like to me that culturally there was some kind like something like very broad that like synced up between what happened financially to the country in 2008 and what was happening culturally,
right? Because that was like,
it was like when that we could no longer cash the checks anymore, and there was something about this, like, we watched this sort of,
it was fall
messy
of an
decline. Yeah, but it went out over, like, it was able to sustain itself and, like, also generate its own kind of, like, culture just in, like, watching people like Lindsay Lohan.
Right, I hated all that stuff. There was all the, like, there was a lot of just, like...
Predatory. Well, what do you think about it being, like, campified now? Like, blogs,
I think
like,
it's gross.
Pop culture died in 2008.
That one's fine, because now you're just like, oh, this is what I thought was so bad, and now it's like... But I don't know, part of the reason I thought it was bad is because I was like, Paris Hilton, like, is a racist, and, you know... So it was like,
yeah, there was nothing fun. I don't remember anything being fun about following whatever Paris Hilton was doing. I remember it being kind of fun at some point following whatever Lindsay Lohan was doing until it started getting sad. But that was like in 2007.
Yeah.
It started to get really like, or 2006 even. Whenever she became uninsurable, that was really rough. I think I always like liked her.
Yeah,
and so
I was rooting
sort of
for her until it became apparent that she was like not somebody you should root for.
Yeah.
Speaking, like, we always talk about like all the messy women of that time, but like Brett Ratner like figured in prominently.
Yeah.
In all these like gossip stories and stuff, like being just a coked out mess.
Well, think about all the stuff that was happening we like did not know about. I'm sure. Well, what's his name? Brandon.
Firecrotch guy.
The firecrotch guy. He was the cokiest, sweatiest.
Yeah, all these sweaty boys.
Well, it was
Perez
Hilton had a really like mean, like,
just
greasy bear. Every something.
Yeah. All. It was a gross time. I feel like it's fine to acknowledge that it was like a gross time and we were mostly miserable.
Can I tell you, I had a pretty good 2008 up until the end. And I was remembering that on, like, I think it was Christmas Eve, my parents were visiting and we were like, let's go see a movie. Let's go see Gran Torino.
Oh my God.
And about halfway through the movie, I just started panicking. I was like, I picked the wrong movie to see. Oh, like, my parents are old. Like, oh no. And I just started crying. And I was like, it's going to be fine. And then we had Christmas. And then like the morning, the day after Christmas, early in the morning, we were renting this little house in Laurel Canyon. And I was like, we're going to stay here forever. It was so beautiful. There were like deer in the yard. And someone came and knocked on our door and explained that the house was in pre-foreclosure. And that the owner, who was our landlord, who we just loved and who by all appearances was doing so great for himself, had stopped paying a long time ago. And then in a conversation with our landlord, he was kind of like, do you guys think you might want to buy it? I'll give you a great price. And we were like, haha, we're 25. Oh, we don't have jobs that are normal. Like, what? No. But all of a sudden I was like, oh, shit. Like, things seem really, like, I knew things were bad, but now things are, like, super bad, and I just saw Gran Torino and ruined Christmas. It was just really intense.
I associate Gran Torino at that time so much, I don't know why, but, like, it feels sort of spooky that you brought it up, because I do think of that as just being, like, a bummer.
Somebody explained it to me, like, recently, because I don't know why it came up, but they were like, Gran Torino, he's, like, the racist, and but they were saying it's about, like, a really specific thing.
Does it take place in Minnesota? Because I know that that's where a lot of Hmong people are, but like...
Yeah, it's about...
I can't remember, but it's about a very specific immigrant community.
Right, yeah. And like he like read a story about it and was like, this will make a great movie.
Yeah. Like, I think that one of the reasons we were thinking about 2008, or one reason I've been thinking, I mean, I'm always thinking about 2008, but one reason I think we were talking about it is like there have been so many... or like a month ago, there were all these 10-year anniversary pieces about The Dark Knight. And everybody
movie.
Was sharing their like stories of seeing Dark Knight for the first time. And it took me 5 seconds to think back about the circumstances in which I saw Dark Knight. And I was like, oh my God, like that really, that is like 2008 to me.
This is why, like, I quit Twitter, so I don't have to hear anyone's like thoughts about The Dark Knight ever again.
And look, meanwhile, here you go. We found you.
They'll find you.
I hate those movies so much. The Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Remember when I was trying to be friends with you guys before we had a podcast together and I asked you guys to see Dark Knight Rises with me?
No. Were we like, no?
Yeah, you were like, no.
That's so mean. We were hazing you. But it wasn't about you. It was really just that I hate those movies, which I really do. I saw the first one in Croatia, and that was the one I enjoyed the most because I saw it in...
Because you were in Croatia.
Because I was in Croatia, and it was like, we have some time to kill. Let's see a movie. And so it was called Batman Pochatak, and it was like subtitled... in Croatian. And that one I was like, this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but I hate it. I don't know. I like campy Batman.
I kind of like the first one because I think it's kind of campy. Like, I think Pretty Man from Batman Begins.
Cillian Murphy?
Cillian Murphy. I think he's, like, super campy and fun in that movie as a villain. Like, where he just, like, puts a bag on his head.
I thought the bag was scary, actually. You like Batman?
I've said this. I feel like I can't even say it more because it's, like, I've just said all I have to say. I like Batman.
Emily, you like Batman, too, right? Because he's goth.
Batman's fine. I'm Batman agnostic. Batman is good sometimes and Batman is bad sometimes.
I fucking hate Batman.
I know, because he's a cop and he's a rich guy.
No, he's a billionaire who works for the cops. I like the villainesses of the Batman universe.
I like the Penguin. Right. I was always very intrigued by the Penguin.
Yeah, right. I like the villains, I guess, even the Joker.
I think the villains are what make... Like, that's the thing about Batman, right? Is that they're
best
good villains.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like we live in... I mean, like, maybe we
do... It's very Gotham City.
We do live in the Joker, the, like, Frank Miller killing joke Joker universe right now, where everything is, like, violent and a nightmare and insane and also, like, just makes no sense and, like, makes you crazy in the way that it, like, makes no sense and there's all these crazy double standards and it's, like... It's like the Joker would make things happen.
Can I tell you guys something that I think about from 2008 all the time?
Yes.
Is the South Park episode about last night that aired the day after the election. Do you remember that? Where Randy gets really drunk and he's like, celebrate good Obama. Come on. It's Obama. There was like this long arc in the previous season, I think, that involved like a jewel heist, and I was just like dipping in and out of the South Park at that point. But apparently they wrote the episode to be like pretty neutral, but they, you know, I guess like they were using a sports betting website, and they were like, obviously Obama's going to win, but just in case, we'll like make it neutral enough that we can like dub it. But it was really interesting because at the time, because I love Randy, I was like, oh man, that's because I bought like literally the day of the election, I parked my car outside of Petco and I had an audition. And then on the way out, I was like, it's such a good day. I'm going to buy a tortoise. And I was like, I'm going to buy a tortoise in honor of Obama. And I got him home. I was like, I'm celebrating. And then like 2 weeks later, the tortoise, I dug fencing down into the ground so he couldn't escape. And he did escape anyway. And now he's like roaming the hills, but he's like native to LA. Whatever,
you
it's fine.
I have had some animals escape.
I've had some animals escape.
Once a snake got lost in my room.
Found it again, though.
You
Francis
found it
lived
again.
A long life.
Found it again in my room.
But anyway, I think of the South Park all the time because I was like, oh, in retrospect, I want to watch it.
You were Randy?
Again. Well, yeah, it was totally Randy, but also it was just interesting because it kind of like foreshadowed the like political divide.
This is again looking back
now.
Is like everything, like hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we need to go back even further because like extra hindsight is like 100/100, which is not how vision works. But
no. Well, I started listening to a podcast about the Clinton impeachment.
That I'm not even like that less, but like 1968, which is like the anniversary. I feel like in a better world where there were more newspapers to write about things, we'd all be talking about those anniversaries. But there are no newspapers now. So if you think about Obama as being like Kennedy, like the Kennedy years, everybody thinks everything's going to be great. And then it turns into like the Nixon years, like very quickly.
Sure, yeah.
I just feel like when people talk about the 60s being tumultuous, like now I understand why they always use the word tumultuous. Because they're like, oh yeah, this is incredibly stressful. And
look,
like
in the space of like a year, you had a president assassinated and then impeached, like, or space of a decade rather.
Right.
Like, or like articles of impeachment drawn up. Like, I feel like that's pretty comparable to now, except now we have all the like media chatter also compounding it to make every moment feel that much
bigger.
Right,
but I like the moment in the civil rights movement when people were still like, we're gonna fix stuff and make it better before the like backlash, and we're like in the backlash now, but we're obviously also in a civil rights movement. It's like yesterday was like the anniversary of Heather Heyer getting killed. It's just like stuff is happening all the goddamn time, it feels like. And I keep being like, why can't I project like 2 years into the future so I could like see what's going to happen and like help. And that's making me feel insane right now, you know, because everything feels so end of the worldy. But
oh,
it's like,
the other day I was like, it's been a little while since we've had an earthquake. And my husband was like, shut up. But I was like, all of this horrible stuff is happening. Like, I forgot that when things were like less hectic, I was always like, earthquakes, nervous about those earthquakes. And now I'm like, I've forgotten to be nervous about earthquakes because there's too much other stuff.
Yeah. It's just weird to be like, oh, 2008, an innocent, like, calm time, when I think for the most part we were, like, miserable and unemployed.
Well, also,
2008
like,
2008 was, like, the, it felt like the end of the world at the time, I think. Like, I mean, my experience of it, both, like, as a part of a generation that was uniquely affected by it, like, as we all were, and we've talked about that before, but then also, like, personally, I feel like a lot of stuff felt very, very fucking...
But isn't that also just, like, being 24 or whatever and being, things
think so
are happening in my life?
I think that lessened it. I mean, I think being in our mid-20s kind of, like, while we were affected by things,
right,
it was,
I was
so
like,
much less so than now.
Because I just thought that, like, no one ever had a job in their 20s when they got out of college. I was like, that's just what happens is, like, you get out of college and you apply for all these jobs and you don't get any of them and then you have to take, like, a shittier job and then they let you go. And
or just like the things that were happening seemed stressful, but it was like, well, we have time before, you know, we like, well, of course, maybe eventually I'll buy a house. I just have to let all this settle down. And it's very sad, but I'm in my 20s.
Right,
and then
right.
It's like, oh, no, no.
Soon, the jobs and opportunities will come.
Yeah.
And then they like did for a while. And
Summer of 2008, though, like, I was, like, living in a closet on a mattress.
Yeah.
Like, that was my experience. Like, I don't know. It didn't feel like normal 20-something shit that I was going through, I have to say.
I feel like I felt the same way, but I feel like that's also because of Facebook and stuff, where I was like, other people are having normal lives where they like go on trips and
the,
like
the going on the trips was a big thing in the 2000s. I was a bridesmaid a bunch, and I was like, how can people afford
that was a big thing.
I mean, I still struggle with that, where I'm like, people take a lot of trips. Like, it's really expensive to take a trip, and you're taking like all of these trips, and like, you know, it just back in 2008, I was like, wow, like my friends are so successful.
Well, I remember also when Facebook started being like, haha, wouldn't it be weird if we were all on Facebook until people are like getting married and having kids
and stuff. But we will, of course, not be
But of
doing
course
that.
We will not be on that platform anymore. We'll be on
I was off it.
Well, good for
you. You weren't on Facebook in 2008?
Well, no, I got on Facebook in college, like, you know, but I was off it by the time I got married. I thought that's what you were saying. Like, what if we were still on this when we were?
Oh, yeah,
married?
Yeah,
I was not. That's what I'm saying.
Right. But like other people, I was like, people are posting their like newborn photos on Facebook. This is so weird. Like, also, how do the newborns feel? Like, how are the newborns going to feel when they become old enough to see that there's like a digital record of their life on screen?
I don't know that many people I knew had babies, but I was very there for the pet photos on Facebook in that era because everyone was getting like their first pets.
That's funny.
I still like pet Facebook.
Well, it's funny how much, I don't know, I feel like just that thing of like comparing yourself against your peers and the way the internet made it possible to do that in like new ways that were probably not good for anybody.
I think they mentioned that because New York Magazine right now is doing, Emily pointed us to, they're doing like a 2008 retrospective. And I think, did Instagram start in 2008?
There were other things that were precursors to Instagram.
Right. Like, it was called like
Hipstamatic.
Yeah. It was called Hipstamatic.
I have the Hipstamatic app still.
Ooh. Oh, I didn't do Instagram for a long time.
I didn't either. No.
And I remember seeing.
I didn't do it till I got. I didn't have a smart device for a very
long
time.
Yeah, me too. Because I was like, what could be worse for me than the internet on my phone? That's the worst possible thing for me, a person with an addictive personality for whom the internet is a trap.
For whom the internet tolls. It tolls for you.
Wow. This was a trip down memory lane during which I realized I know nothing about myself.
Well, I think that 2008 is not, like, I feel like I had a very subjective understanding of why 2008 was significant just for my own life. But I think the more time goes by, the more I realize that, like, everybody was kind of going through it in different ways and not, kind of a lot of that has to do with the recession. But the real effects of the recession weren't really until 2009, at least for me, and like financially and stuff. So
I was already broke, I think, at that point. It was definitely like we got out of college in 2005, and there were also like not jobs waiting for us at all. I was applying for like so many magazine, like I applied to Tiger Beat so many times.
Oh man, that's a shame they didn't hire you at
Tiger
Beat.
I know, it's like I'd be so good at it. That was my life plan, was to get a job at Tiger Beat and then write a tell-all about the tween, like, industrial exploitation sector.
You still could?
Still could. Had a lot of ideas.
You just blew your cover, though.
I just blew my cover.
Well, thank you for listening to this 2008 special of Night Call. We're still open to some 2008 memories if you want to call in and leave them for us.
If you have any fond memories of the 2080s, feel free to leave them for us. But also if you want to tell us about how you were also miserable and broke and alone and sleeping on a mattress in a closet and thought things could never get worse. And actually, you know what, guys? Like, things are kind of better in some ways for us as humans.
Personally, things are better for me.
I'm a more stable person, I think. Yeah. Question mark.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. Once again, give us a call at 1-240-46-NIGHT or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And leave us a review on iTunes and a rating. We love them.
We love
you. Keep them coming. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.